Hello, and welcome to the Lauder Podcast. This is your host, Danielle Rochford, and joining me today is Kimberly Conroy, Global Career Advisor at the Lauder Institute. Today, Kim will be discussing her role in helping students with their internships and career searches. Kim, are you ready to get started?
Yes, I am, Danielle.
All right, so for my first question, please tell me about your own career path and how that prepared you for your role as Lauder Global Career Advisor.
Well, I was born in New York City, spent one of my high school years in Switzerland learning French, and attended Dartmouth College as a member of the first class that admitted women. While I majored in Latin American history, I also learned to speak Spanish at Dartmouth. In the summer of my junior year, I was hired by Save the Children to work in its office in Honduras, Central America. The managing director in Honduras asked me to write a business plan to establish a fruit cannery in a small village. Shortly after receiving this assignment, I walked over to the U.S. Embassy, and I asked if someone could direct me to the USAID office. Once there, I asked if there was anyone on staff who held an MBA. Yes, I was told, that gentleman over there. His name's Aaron. He has an MBA. So I walked over to Aaron. I introduced myself, and I said, so Aaron, what's a business plan? He explained to me, and I asked him, might we work on this business plan together? Because I have to build a fruit processing plant, and we need a business plan. And he agreed to. In fact, he agreed to do the financial modeling, and I would do all the rest. At the end of the summer, I presented our business plan to Save the Children's managing director, who in turn sent it to USAID to see if they would fund it. They said they would, especially as the financials were all prepared by Aaron. I was then asked if I would oversee the organization of the women's cooperative that would own and run the factory, as well as organize its initial operation, and I agreed to do so. When I went to the village to organize the women's cooperative, I asked one of the women how many children she had. She responded, well, what do you mean, Kim? Alive or in all? As it turned out, all of the 22 women with whom I worked had lost two or three children to malnutrition. It wasn't that their husbands were evil. It was that they were very poor, landless peasants. They made less than $500 a year and on average had eight children. Also, occasionally these men would spend money on beer or rum or cigarettes, which resulted in their not being enough money for food. So it became very important to me that mothers always made enough money to feed their children. My 2.5 years with Save the Children led to my being hired as a consultant for the World Bank, where I reviewed various small-scale industries and agribusinesses in Mexico. While at the World Bank, I came to know the gentleman who represented Mexico on its board of directors. He told me that he was soon returning to Mexico to run a $500 million rural development program and wanted to know if I would join his staff. I was thrilled to do so, I told him, but with one condition, that he would let me set up a pilot project in 5 Mexican states, teaching women basic financial skills so they could start and run their own small businesses, be they fruit and vegetable stands, or small hair salons or something else. He agreed to my request, so I worked for the Mexican government for the next few years, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I then made a rather dramatic career switch. I decided to be a freelance journalist. I knew the New York Times correspondent for Mexico, Alan Riding, and asked if he would be willing to edit my copy to ensure I wouldn't starve in my new job. He agreed, and I began working first for ABC News radio station and then for National Public Radio. After several months, National Public Radio asked if I would accompany one of their star journalists, Scott Simon, to El Salvador to cover a presidential election that was occurring in the middle of a civil war. I agreed to do so, and while there, ended up meeting Robert Tyra, a British journalist who went on to become the BBC's Latin America correspondent, and my husband. Robert and I spent an additional year covering the civil war in El Salvador, and then moved to Rio de Janeiro. From there, we covered stories in Argentina and Chile, as well as in Brazil. And after a few months of intensive Portuguese language training, I joined the staff of the Associated Press Dow Jones. It was a fascinating time to be a journalist in Brazil, as the government was returning to democracy after 20 years of military rule, and inflation was running at 2,000%. In 1986, Robert took a job back in London with the Sunday Times. By that time, we had an infant son, whom we called Sean. Shortly after arriving in London, it became obvious we had a new challenge. While journalism is a fascinating career, Unless you are an on-camera TV reporter, it pays quite poorly. So I brushed up my CV and managed to land jobs both at Morgan Stanley and at Lloyds Development Capital, the private equity arm of Lloyds Merchant Bank. I chose to work at Lloyds PE firm. It was a steep learning curve, but intellectually challenging work. Sadly, the marriage didn't work out. So in May 1991, I returned home to New York City with Sean, our 5-year-old son. I started interviewing for jobs. Repeatedly, I was told, "Kim, you have a great resume, but if you had an MBA, it would be all the better." As I mentioned, this was summer, so officially the admissions process was closed at all the reputable U.S. business schools. Fortunately, I knew a professor who had recently retired from Columbia University's business school. He agreed to ask his colleagues in the admissions office to review my application. They accepted me in July to start that September. As I was already 34 years old, I decided not to take an MBA summer internship, but rather go straight through, completing my degree in 15 months. Post-MBA, I joined J.P. Morgan in their Latin American Capital Markets division. After not too many months, I was able to convince several managing directors to let me start a new business. Only months earlier, J.P. Morgan had started issuing short-term debt, known as commercial paper, for its Latin American corporate clients. I convinced my supervisors to let me buy 10 to 20% of many of those tranches of 3-, 6-, and 9-month debt of companies they had banked for many years. The yields on this paper were significantly higher than those on the loans they were extending at the same time, so it was a highly profitable business. In fact, leveraging Morgan's credit analysts throughout the region, I was able to build a $1.4 billion book that came to represent 25% of the bank's interest earnings in Latin America, its largest market outside the United States. I stayed with J.P. Morgan for 6 years and then moved to Oppenheimer Capital, a $60 billion asset management firm. As Oppenheimer's investigative analyst, I spoke regularly with the customers, suppliers, and competitors of the companies in our equity portfolios to decide whether we should double up on our holdings of a given company whose stock had been underperforming or sell it. My colleagues were all MBAs from top schools, and we had a fine time working together for close to 10 years until the 07-08 financial crisis. At that point, our top portfolio manager had accumulated large equity positions in banks, home builders, and mortgage-backed security companies because they were cheap. And they were cheap. But when the financial crisis occurred, they unfortunately got a lot cheaper. And over the next few years, we all lost our jobs. That was sad, but not that sad for me. I had worked on Wall Street for 15 years and never spent a single dollar of the bonuses I had been paid. I had bought an apartment and paid off the mortgage. My son was through college, and I paid for his law school. So now I was free to take on new challenges. I worked for the Kipp Foundation, a charter school group, for about a year, and also did research on a freelance basis for a leading hedge fund before learning about the incredible opportunity to be the global career advisor at the Lauder Institute. I tell this story in depth for a reason. My career well prepared me to be Lauder's global career advisor. As someone who has learned to speak 3 foreign languages fluently and who has worked in many, many countries, I deeply appreciate the value of the language training and cross-cultural courses which are at the core of the Lauder education. Some people claim that learning languages is no longer relevant, as English is the language of business. I respectfully disagree. If you have taken the time to learn the language of a people and can sing their songs and understand their jokes, the respect you gain is immeasurable. It gives you a huge competitive advantage in whatever work you do. Also, having maneuvered a career across multiple sectors, I am well aware of the challenges of career transition. Most MBA students come to Wharton because whatever they used to do, they don't want to keep on doing. Understanding how to effectively transition from one company to another or from one sector to another is something I know well. So during my regular one-on-one meetings with Lauder students, we spend a lot of time discussing how they can best prepare to recruit effectively for their summer internship and full-time positions. However, we also look much more broadly at their career aspirations and discuss what skill sets and brands they should add to their CV to ensure they can successfully pivot as they want to or need to over their entire professional careers.
Kim, thank you so much for sharing about your background. Can you also tell me about what kind of career services are offered to Lauder students?
As Lauder only accepts 60 to 70 students a year, I am able to offer a high level of individualized attention. I start by having a one-hour, one-on-one video call with most of the newly arrived Lauder students during their summer immersion. Those calls usually include a follow-up email from me with the names and email addresses of Lauder alumni or second-year students or colleagues of mine with whom they can speak over the coming weeks to better understand the companies or sectors of interest to them. I keep detailed notes of these conversations so we can pick up where we left off the next time we speak. Throughout the academic year, I meet with most Lauder students multiple times. Even when I'm not on campus, the students know that I'm there for them 365 days a year, and I'm happy to speak with them 7 days a week. During our regular one-on-one meetings, we spend a lot of time discussing their past career trajectory and where they hope to be over the next 2 to 10 years. We discuss the skills they have acquired and the additional ones that would be beneficial to gain while at Wharton and Lauder. In fall, I organize a series of career panels, both with second-year Lauder students and Lauder alumni. I also work closely with second-year Lauder students to help them assist the first years in preparing for the highly competitive summer internship recruitment process. This includes having second years host brunches at their apartments in fall to provide the first years with a roadmap for the recruitment process by sector. They subsequently offer additional sessions to help the first years with the technical preparation. For example, for those recruiting for consulting firms, the second years organize casing marathons. And for those recruiting for investment banking, they organize sessions on financial modeling.
Awesome. And then is there any typical path for Lauder students to go down?
Lauder students come from all walks of life and pursue a wide variety of career paths. We have students who have been everything from Korean pop stars to F-16 fighter pilots to private equity executives. They are very smart, driven, accomplished young professionals. In addition, all of them speak fluently at least 2 languages, and most have worked on at least 2 continents. They appreciate the complexity of working across cultures to achieve success, and they come to the Lauder Institute to further refine those skills. While there is no typical path, many of our graduates work for major consulting firms, multinational corporations, financial firms, and tech companies that regularly have them serving clients or building businesses around the globe.
That's great to hear. And so how do alumni play a part in the career search for students?
As I mentioned, most young professionals who decide to attend an MBA program like Wharton Lauder do so because whatever they used to do is not what they want to do going forward. Some have a very clear idea of what they want to do next, but others are still considering various options. So a big part of my job is assisting our students to speak with Lauder alumni in companies or sectors of interest to them so they can give them an objective read on what is the good, the bad, and the ugly of these various options. This starts shortly after the Lauder students start the program, when I talk individually with most of them about their possible next career moves. Shortly thereafter, I email them the names and email addresses of Lauder alumni with whom they can speak. In fall, the students have the opportunity to participate in video conference calls with up to 30 Lauder alumni who tell them about their personal career trajectories, offer career advice, and answer their questions. We annually organize a Lauder alumni career panel and networking event in Philadelphia, and many Lauder alumni come to campus to speak to the students throughout the year. In addition, each summer I host a Lauder student and alumni career networking event at my loft in New York City, to which all the first-year Lauder students who are working in New York City as summer interns are invited, as are the second years who just graduated, as are the 4 classes of alumni just above them. This way, 6 years of Lauderites Working in the Big Apple, get to know each other so they can be there to support each other.
Wow, that's definitely a lot of networking. I'm sure that's really helpful to everybody. So what are some examples of careers that Lauder students embark on after graduation?
Lauder students decide to take many different paths. For example, Davis Smith, a Lauder 2012 graduate, is now on his third entrepreneurial venture, running a high-quality outdoor gear company called Cotopaxi that gives away 10% of its profits for poverty alleviation around the world. His goal is to build Cotopaxi to a $1 billion revenue company, and I, for one, have no doubt he will accomplish his goal. While Chang Sung joined Goldman Sachs right after Lauder, he subsequently went to the private equity firm of Warburg Pincus, where he established and grew its business in mainland China. He left in 2015 to found Black Soil Capital Partners, a $1 billion private equity fund investing in Chinese agribusinesses. On the new media front, we have Lauder alumnus Tom Klein at MailChimp. He's the chief marketing officer of this company, which is the world's leading email marketing firm. Robert Konigsberger co-founded Gramercy, a firm that invests in special situations throughout emerging and frontier markets. We have numerous alumni at leading private equity firms, including Rene Kern, who established General Atlantic's office in São Paulo, Brazil, and Casey Santos, who joined the same firm as its chief information officer after spending several years as an engineer at NASA and then working as a consultant for McKinsey. There's also Bart Swanson, who does private equity and alternative investing for Li Ka-shing, one of Asia's richest men. In the social impact space, we have Rostin Schwab working on mobile communications platforms for the IFC in South Africa, and Claudia Gutierrez working for the same organization on agricultural development in Brazil, as well as Stephanie von Friedberg, who is the chief technology officer of the World Bank Group. We also have Philip Wilson, the founder of Ecofiltro, a for-profit company that sells low-cost water filtration systems in Guatemala, Mexico, and Honduras so that poor rural families can have clean drinking water. We also have alumni at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Technoserve, and Acción Internacional. Out in the Bay Area, we have Vincent Tulin, who heads financial planning and acquisitions at Dropbox, James Redfern doing a similar job at WeWork, and Stephanie Haggio, building Airbnb's client base in mainland China. At the more established tech firms, including Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, we have many, many alumni around the globe. FinTech is an area of increasing interest, and we have alumni at NerdWallet, Karma Credit, and Jet.com. We also have many, many alumni at the leading consulting firms, multinational corporations, and investment banks throughout the world. And with almost no exceptions, all these wonderful alumni are delighted to assist Lauder students as they assess their summer internship and post-MBA career options.
And my last question for you is there any advice to applicants who are thinking about Lauder and how the program can help them with their career?
At all of the leading business schools in the world, one will find a broad mix of students from many different countries. However, all too often, the students of any given nationality tend to stick together, the Chinese with the Chinese, the Brazilians with the Brazilians, etc. Students who come to the Lauder Institute do so with the conviction that spending months studying and traveling abroad together with students from all over the world is a large part of what makes this educational experience uniquely enriching. In addition, through regular interaction with Lauder alumni all over the globe who work in a wide variety of fields, Lauder students gain inside knowledge of different career paths that allow them to make more informed professional decisions. What you learn at Lauder is as unique as is the extended community you build here. Lauder students tell me that when they reach out to Wharton alumni, they almost always respond. But when they reach out to Lauder alumni, they proactively offer career advice, or offer to help them prepare for specific job interviews, or offer to try to help them identify job opportunities. And Lauder alumni regularly tell me that for the rest of their lives, their Lauder classmates remain their closest friends and often help them in their careers. This is a unique community that takes very good care of its own. I would maintain that being part of Lauder is not only a significant competitive advantage professionally, but also personally. As I like to say, once you're a Lauder, you're a Lauder for life.
Kim, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, and thanks to everyone who is listening. If anyone would like to learn more about the Lauder program, please visit us at lauder.wharton.upenn.edu.